for Leologos Radio, the weekly radio program featuring the best in Greek music and culture, plus interviews with Greek and international newsmakers. Leologos Radio with Michael Nevaralekis begins now.
Hello and welcome to, for the first time in a year, a new edition of the Leologos Radio, the worldwide Greek radio program heard on 27 radio stations across 5 countries, 4 continents, and online. My name is Michael Nevradakis, and I am back on the air with you today after a very long absence, one that was due in large part to life changes on my end, a dissertation that was completed along with a PhD, health challenges that had to be overcome, work challenges that also had to be overcome, new academic employment, and much more. I'm glad to be back, though, and just in time to cover an issue that is of national importance to Greeks, and which has, of course, been in the news worldwide in the past couple of weeks, the supposed ratification of the so-called PRESPA agreement, which recognizes the name of Greece's northern neighbor as North Macedonia, recognizes a so-called Macedonian language and Macedonian ethnicity, and which opens the door for the country that will be calling itself North Macedonia to begin the process of joining NATO and the European Union. This is a very complex issue, and there's lots of things one could say about it, more than there is time to do so on today's program. But to start off, suffice it to say that practically everything that you have probably heard about this agreement in the mainstream media is a lie. I'm not exaggerating when I say this. The foreign media and the Greek media as well have been unabashedly in favor of this agreement, and one needs to go no further than the Twitter feeds of the various foreign correspondents that are based in Greece to see their true colors being revealed on this issue. This very complex issue, and in particular the issue of the PRESPA agreement, can actually be summarized very neatly and concisely. The agreement is illegal. It is unconstitutional in both countries, it is illegal, and it should be invalidated. Now, why is it illegal and unconstitutional? In Greece's neighbor to the north, the referendum held on the issue did not meet the required 50% plus one participation rate to validate it. Even more importantly, though, that country's president did not sign off on the laws and the constitutional amendments passed by his country's parliament in order to ratify this new legislation and the constitutional amendments mandated by the PRESPA agreement. More to the point, these constitutional changes have not actually been made as of yet. And despite the fact that these constitutional amendments were required in order for Greece to then, on its end, ratify the agreement, the Greek parliament went ahead and ratified it anyway, and it did so only with a simple majority vote, which turned out to be 154 members of parliament out of 300, instead of the two-thirds supermajority, or 180 members of parliament, that the Greek constitution requires for ratifying agreements with foreign countries. It is also evident that the United Nations special mediator for the Macedonia dispute, a man by the name of Matthew Nimitz, was far from objective or impartial in his position. This is an individual who operates an NGO based in Greece, the Center for Democracy and Reconciliation in Southeastern Europe, which produces EU-funded history textbooks which are distributed throughout the Balkan region and which recognize Greece's northern neighbor simply as Macedonia. This NGO receives funding from George Soros's various open society foundations, from the US State Department, from the British Foreign Office, from USAID, from the National Endowment for Democracy, and even from the Greek Foreign Ministry. And for those of you listening in the United States, you may also be interested to know that the Cyprus Federation of America is also a donor of this NGO operated and founded by Matthew Nimitz. Nimitz is also on the board of George Soros's Central European University, And the president of this university is the former president of Bard College in New York, which is home to the Levy Economics Institute, whose president is disgraced former Syriza economy minister Dimitris Papadimitriou, while Papadimitriou's wife, Rania Andonopoulou, herself a disgraced former Syriza deputy labor minister, is a senior economist within the same institute. Nimitz was also in charge of Greek-Turkish affairs for the U.S. State Department between 1977 and 1980, and it was during this period that the U.S. embargo on arms sales to Turkey, which had been implemented after Turkey's illegal invasion and occupation of over one-third of Cyprus, was lifted. So in other words, this embargo on U.S. arms sales to Turkey was lifted under Nimitz's watch at the State Department. Now, I've investigated all of this and much more about Nimitz's rather checkered past and his rather checkered connections in an investigative piece that you can find on our website, dialogosmedia.org. That's dialogosmedia.org. And this piece was also recently translated into Greek as well. Now, one of the main planks of this PRESPA agreement is that it recognizes a so-called Macedonian language, and the claim here is that Greece had already recognized such a language at a United Nations conference, which took place in Athens in 1977. But what we aren't being told is, if a so-called Macedonian language was already recognized in 1977, why does it need to be recognized again in 2019? But that's besides the point. A look at the proceedings of this 1977 UN conference, right from the UN's own website, reveals nothing about the recognition of any Macedonian language by Greece or by any other country. It's yet another lie. Now, it should also be mentioned that large majorities in both countries are against this agreement, and each for their own reasons. In Greece, approximately three-fourths of the public oppose the PRESPA agreement, and yet the Syriza government, praised by clueless so-called leftists when they were elected back in 2015, despite all the evidence to the contrary, a Syriza government that has rammed through austerity, cuts, and privatization, and which has been more pro-NATO than any other government in Greece's previous history, went against public opinion, as it has done so many times over the past 4 years, and rammed through this agreement and is patting itself on the back for doing so. A government which, I should say, was elected by less than 20% of registered voters 4 years ago, and which is even less popular in Greece today. Yet now we are hearing that Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and his counterpart in Greece's neighbor to the north, Zoran Zaev, have been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. For what, though? The two countries were not at war. The border between them was open all this time, and Greece has been and continues to be one of the biggest foreign investors in that country. But just the fact that the Nobel Peace Prize has also been awarded to the likes of Barack Obama with the Seven Wars and to Henry Kissinger says it all. Now, there's many around the world, including many in the international press, who just cannot make sense of this Macedonia dispute and chalk it up to petty nationalism, with nationalism, of course, being such a dirty word in our day and age. Deutsche Welle, the German state broadcaster, called the Macedonia name dispute bizarre. But ask yourselves this. If the issue is so bizarre, if it is simply another one of these senseless, stupid Balkan disputes we've all gotten so used to in the past few decades, then why are NATO, the European Union, and the State Department so adamant about forcing this deal through? What's in it for them? And why are Tsipras and Zaev being discussed as potential recipients of the Nobel Prize? Obviously, what we have here is more than just a simple nationalistic dispute. Now, what we'll hear today for the rest of our broadcast are three interviews that I've provided recently on the Macedonia issue and the PRESPA agreement. These interviews provide further analysis about the agreement, about the Macedonia dispute, and the geopolitical implications of this deal. The first interview we'll hear aired on Friday, January 25th on Radio Sputnik US, and the Fault Lines radio program with Garland Nixon and Lee Stranahan, and it begins now here on the Alagos Radio.
Fault Lines.
And we now have with us Dr. Michael Nevridakis. Dr. Nevridakis happens to be, well, he's normally in Greece. Let's just hope he's in Greece now. Mm-hmm. But he's the host of Dialogos Radio. Dialogos? Michael Nevridakis, how do I pronounce the name of your radio show?
Well, the Greek way is Dialogos.
Oh, there we go. Dialogos. That sounds good. Okay. So let's talk about a couple of things. We're talking about, let's start with this, which I never understood. And maybe you can explain to ignorant Americans like me, the issue of the Macedonia name change. To me, of course, I don't know any history on it. I'm like, yeah, who cares what they call a country? But I understand that that's such a big deal in Greece. Why, for starters, is it such a big deal, the naming of this, I don't know, what is a country? What is it anyway? Is it a country?
It's the country right to the north of Greece.
Okay. And why is everybody so freaked out over the name? People like me, we really don't understand it. What's it all about?
Well, there's a lot of issues that have to do with history and culture, but I think the most significant issues have to do with geopolitics. And sometimes the two in the past few years have gotten intertwined. The country that calls itself Macedonia, or that will now be calling itself North Macedonia, is a former Yugoslav republic. It gained its independence when Yugoslavia collapsed in 1991. And that's when it declared itself the Republic of Macedonia. Now, Macedonia is also the name of a region of northern Greece. It's a region and a name that has been historically associated with Greece and culturally associated with Greece. But aside from issues over, who has historical rights to the name, what we have been seeing in the past two or three decades is a nationalist push on the part of people living in the country calling itself Macedonia for a so-called Greater Macedonia. There's been politicians from that country, for instance, that have appeared and been photographed in front of maps of the so-called Greater Macedonia, which includes large portions of Greek territory. So that's one very significant issue that has a lot of people in Greece feeling very disturbed. A lot of people see this issue overseas as, just a nationalist dispute between nationalists in two countries. Who cares what this country calls itself? The issue is, if it's just an issue over a name, then why is the State Department and NATO and the European Union so invested in what that country calls itself? And why are they so insistent, by the way, that the country has a name that includes the word Macedonia in it? So I think if one asks themselves that question, they may realize that the issue at hand is more than just a name, but it has to do a lot with NATO and European Union influence in the area. I'll give one example here. Recently, German Chancellor Angela Merkel was asked a question that had to do with the consequences of Brexit and Great Britain leaving the European Union. And she said that would be offset by the expansion of the European Union into the Southern Balkans. And she meant countries like the so-called Macedonia. So that should indicate that there is a huge interest, a huge geopolitical interest, which involves military bases. It involves the possibility of routing oil and gas pipelines through that region. There's a huge geopolitical interest on the part of the U.S., NATO, and the European Union in that country. The largest U.S. embassy in the world, apparently, is in the capital of that country. So that should say a lot.
What about, as far as, you mentioned pipelines and geopolitics, geographically, what does it sit between for those people, for people like me who couldn't find it on the map? Where does it sit? And is its geographical location of consequence in this whole kind of NATO, EU, Eastern kind of, kerfluffle going on right now?
It's a country that's located in a powder keg of a region. It's north of Greece. It's between Albania and Bulgaria to the west and east. Kosovo is to the north of is to the north of this country. This is a region that is not exactly stable. Even internally within the country that's calling itself Macedonia, there have been many issues in recent years with the country's very large Albanian minority. There's issues going on right now involving Kosovo and a possible redrawing of the boundaries with Serbia and with Albania. So this is a region that is very, very unstable. And it's all the more reason why actors such as the U.S. and the State Department, NATO, and the European Union would like a strong foothold in the region. Now, one thing that I should mention here is that a fear that many people have in Greece is that by calling this country North Macedonia, you're immediately implying that there is a South Macedonia, which is the northern region of Greece, and that at some later point in the future, the two should be united. In other words, forming what some have been calling the Greater Macedonia. Now, despite the fact that the Prespis Agreement, the agreement that was signed between the two countries and which was just voted in today, just about an hour ago by the Greek Parliament, despite the fact that it explicitly, supposedly, prevents either country from making territorial claims on the other, something that should be very indicative about what might happen in the future comes from a statement that was made yesterday by the leader of a political party that represents the so-called Macedonian minority in Greece. It's called the Rainbow Movement. And this individual, the leader of this party, posted on Facebook that this Prespa agreement basically has resulted in the recognition of the rights of the Macedonian minority in Greece. Now, we're talking about a party that has never gotten more than a few hundred votes in any election. So, you know, this is a non-existent movement, basically. But, you know, at some later point, there could be claims that there is a Macedonian minority in Greece whose rights are being trampled upon, and that could serve as the impetus for further development.
You know, the EU is in a very trying time. One could argue crossroads. The Brits are apparently making some effort to head out the door. You know, the yellow vest people are running all over France. That place is falling apart. Looks like a zombie apocalypse going on there. So do you think the fact that the EU is kind of tottering on the edge of, I may be overstating it, but I could say they're you know, on the edge of breaking up. But I think if they lose, you know, you start losing countries like England and France, some people in France want out. And we certainly know how Italy feels. Do you think the precarious situation that the EU finds itself in economically, strategically, is affecting its, focus on Macedonia and that region?
It is. I believe it is. And I think it's evident not just from the Macedonia issue, but from a lot of other developments that we've been seeing recently. The fact, for instance, that Angela Merkel and the French President Macron have been pushing recently very strongly for the formation of a EU army. That should indicate that they're feeling the heat, and they feel that now's the time to double down and to reinforce the power and might of the European Union, precisely because it's being threatened internally by so many different actors, by the yellow vests, by Brexit, by more and more people adopting a Eurosceptic point of view in many countries throughout Europe, the success of Eurosceptic parties in Italy and Hungary and Poland, the Czech Republic, Denmark. All of that clearly has a certain segment of the European Union, the one that is exemplified by Macron, by Merkel, and I would even say the Greek Prime Minister, Alexis Tsipras, who he's very open about his allegiance to the European Union, not so much about his allegiance to Greece, the country he's elected to lead. I think it's indicative of that.
Isn't that kind of also the problem with the European Union and the fear of an EU army? Because, you know, if you're in a particular, let's say you're in Greece and you tell the Greek army, hey, we want you to go, you know, suppress an uprising by the Greek people. Well, that's their friends and family. They may be say, nah, yeah, we're not going to do that. But if you have an EU army, that you can take people from way over the other side of the continent and bring them to a country where they don't speak the language and they have no relationship to them and say, hey, just mow down all these people in the street. And I mean, they're more likely to do that. I mean, is that an overblown fear? Does that discussion even happen, you know, where you are in Greece regarding an EU army?
A lot of people in Greece are concerned about what an EU army would actually represent, and I don't think it's an overblown fear at all. I will add, in fact, that an EU army could supplant or replace NATO in the future. Consider the fact that NATO's role is being questioned, especially by the Trump administration, to the point that the House actually voted recently on the bill to prevent Trump from leaving, from taking the U.S. out of NATO. I mean, it's reached that point. So the EU Army could play that role, could fill a vacuum that might at some point be vacated by NATO.
So, you know, now we see, you know, NATO, the U.S. and the EU involved in the Macedonia name change, the Macedonian issue. So it's been a few years since we had the big issue with Greece and the EU where, you know, basically Greece went broke and everybody around the world, it's interesting, all these people around the world here in the U.S. said, look at Greece, they're irresponsible, they screwed up their money. Yet and now that we look into it, we realize that basically the EU screwed them, that the EU came in massively, that they did, you know, the IMF and all of these did what they do worldwide is go into countries and they leave a country in massive debt and say, all you can do is pay us back our money and your internal people have to suffer. So now that the things in Greece have had a while to simmer, how do you think the attitudes are of the Greek people towards, and I'll name three, NATO, the EU, and then look eastward towards Russia? You know, what are the attitudes that you see on the from the average person in the street about those three particular entities?
I think the average person in Greece, to be honest, and it pains me to see this, but I think the average person feels defeated. There's still a mentality in Greece that the country can't survive without the EU, that as bad as things are, they would be worse if Greece was not a member of the European Union and the Eurozone. I'm not sure the percentage of those people is as high as opinion polls have repeatedly claimed in the past. But you do get this very strong sense of defeatism in Greece and this sort of dependence on the European Union. Now, a lot of that also comes from the fact that the European Union is very good about providing handouts to farmers, to small businesses, and that shuts a lot of mouths. And you really do see that a lot in Greece in recent years. In fact, concerning the Macedonia agreement, there was a statement made by the mayor of a city in northern Greece who said that our farmers, it's a farming region, have been promised better farming subsidies if they close their mouths about this agreement. So that should indicate, you know, how people are even being bribed to not display any open opposition toward the EU and anything that EU does or supports. Now, as far as Russia, there's a lot of people in Greece. I mean, it's not universal, but there's a lot of people in Greece that have feelings of kinship with Russia. There's cultural and religious and historical reasons for that. The current government, however, has been rather hostile toward Russia. There was that incident last year where diplomats were expelled, Russian diplomats were expelled from Greece. And essentially what the Greek government is representing, and it's quite ironic because it's supposedly a radical leftist government that at one time was very much against the U.S., they're essentially representing the State Department and NATO line concerning policy in the Balkans. So I think that's where things stand right now.
Are you paying attention to this? And I talk about EU stuff a lot, particularly with you, because I know based on the history of the EU history in Greece, that it's something that is of great concern to the Greek people. You know, one of the things in looking at Brexit, and I've thought about this because you mentioned, you know, people talking about, you know, oh, well, we may be worse off if we weren't in the EU. I feel that the biggest fear of the EU is that that England will leave the European Union and will prosper. That England will leave this non-state, you know, entity, and that, okay, they'll take a hit maybe for a while, but if we look 2 years down the road, that they may be prosperous and that people may say, well, wait a minute, maybe you're actually better off to leave the European Union. That's their biggest fear. And that other countries will start looking in the mirror saying, you know, maybe, and historically, we were better off before we joined them, and now things have gone to crap. What are your thoughts on that?
Good point, Garland.
I agree. I do think that if Britain does manage to leave and make a clean break from the European Union, and if their economy does prosper immediately or within 1 or 2 or 3 years, it will serve as an example for other countries, Italy or France or even Greece, to say, well, there is an alternative, and we can actually survive without the EU. So I think what we've been seeing with Brexit, and it's just incredible push to overturn the decision made by voters in a referendum, is indicative of that.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time, Dr. Nevridakis. We're talking with Dr. Michael Nevridakis. He's a host of Dialogos Radio. Where can people go online to find your stuff, and where can they find you on Twitter?
It's dialogosmedia.org, dialogosmedia.org. One final thing I'll add quickly is about the PRESPA agreement, the Macedonia agreement. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional, but in both countries. It didn't attain a required participation rate in a referendum that was held in the country calling itself Macedonia. The president of that country has not signed off on these constitutional changes and these laws that were passed. The country's constitution was not changed, despite what the agreement said would happen in, you know, the timeline of approving this deal. And in Greece, international agreements require a parliamentary supermajority of 180 or 2/3 out of 300. And today the deal was passed with 153 instead of 180. So this is an invalid deal, according to the constitutions of both countries.
Wow. Well, the people in power, they only care about the rules when it works for them.
When it doesn't work for them,
rules are made to be broken when you need to get your way.
Or exceptions.
How about that? We'll be right back with Tom Luongo, geopolitical analyst and the publisher of Gold, Goats, and Guns. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
This is the Dialogos Radio with Michael Nevridakis, where we just heard an interview that I recently gave to Fault Lines Radio with Garland Nixon and Lee Stranahan, which aired on Radio Sputnik US on January 25th, and which provided an overview of the Macedonia dispute. Coming up now is some further analysis of the issue in a second interview that I provided, this one to Andrew Karipko of Radio Sputnik's Trendstorm radio program, also broadcast originally on Friday, January 25th.
Trendstorm. Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the controversial PRESPA agreement. The PRESPA agreement that was signed last summer between Macedonia and Greece over changing the former's name seems to have opened up Pandora's box and is provoking regional destabilization. The Macedonian parliament passed an amendment earlier this month renaming the country as the so-called Republic of North Macedonia, following accusations that the ruling party bribed and coerced various legislators to go along with it. In what was likely a quid pro quo with the minority Albanian representatives, the parliament also passed another law soon thereafter making Albanian an official language, though President Ivanov didn't sign off on either proposal and claims that both moves are illegal. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also questioned the legitimacy of the name change process, suggesting that it might be part of a plot to facilitate the landlocked country's entry into NATO. He has a valid point, too, because Macedonia will be fast-tracked into the military bloc if Athens approves of the agreement, though therein lies the bone of contention because many Greeks are adamantly opposed to the deal because they regard it as a sellout of their national heritage. Large-scale but peaceful protests were violently broken up by police and mass provocateurs, injuring a Sputnik stringer and many others who were caught up in the fracas. Tsipras's government also nearly survived a vote of no confidence earlier this month as well, though there are fears that it might collapse if it moves any closer towards certifying the deal. All of this renewed and some might cynically say pre-planned and deliberately weaponized destabilization is occurring at a very sensitive moment for the Balkans. The specter of so-called Greater Albania looms larger than ever after Macedonia's controversial language law was just passed, while Turkey continues breathing down Greece's neck in the Eastern Aegean. Asymmetrical and conventional threats abound, and both countries' governments are under serious pressure by patriotic protesters who oppose the Prespa Agreement but are being maligned as Russian agents as part of an international disinformation campaign meant to delegitimize their views. All the while, former British diplomat Timothy Less's explosive late 2016 proposal to redivide the Balkans along ethnic lines continues to gain support in various sectors and might be facilitated by the latest developments. The prevailing uncertainty in the region that was brought about by the Prespa Agreement worryingly makes it seem like Pandora's box is reopening and that the Balkans are bound to remain a tinderbox. Gosh, folks, like we were just talking about last week, you know, we're always going to keep our eyes on the Balkans. A lot of important developments are going on in what some regard as Europe's back door to the rest of the world. So we're going to begin our conversation by speaking to Dr. Michael Nevardakis. He's also a PhD. He's an independent journalist based in Athens, producer and host of Dialogos Radio, and communications faculty at the American College of Greece.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Michael, last weekend's peaceful protest that you attended unexpectedly turned violent, and you claimed on social media that you were even assaulted during the course of chaotic events. So can you please tell us more about what really happened there and why the mainstream media is reluctant to cover the truth?
Well, there's a lot that can be said, Andrew, but to put it in a nutshell, the media is completely misrepresenting everything about the rally that took place in Athens on Sunday. The crowd was much larger than the figure of 60,000 was provided by the police and by the media. The crowd stretched further than last February's rally in Athens, and back then they provided an estimate of 90,000. But the reality in both cases is that we're probably talking about hundreds of thousands of participants, if not more. Now, about the violence, it's a tried and true tactic used by the Greek state whenever it wants to put down a protest. Hooded thugs suddenly appear out of nowhere with gas masks, motorcycle helmets, and large backpacks. And suddenly they begin hurling Molotov cocktails and other objects at the riot police and egg them on to respond. And the riot police, which the current Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras had one time had promised to abolish, they respond by indiscriminately throwing tear gas not at the thugs but at the crowd at large. And of course this forces the crowd to disperse and effectively ends the rally. So this happened on Sunday, and the twist is that now the government is claiming that these thugs came from the far right and from groups such as Golden Dawn, whereas in the past, typically these thugs will be accused of coming from anarchist or Antifa circles. They assaulted anyone that they saw that was taking photos, and they would demand that you would either delete your photos or stop taking photos. They shoved me personally and demanded that I stop taking pictures. And, you know, what follows from this is the Greek government has repeatedly claimed that those who oppose the Prespa Agreement are far-right nationalists. And by extension, by saying that these thugs were from far-right circles, it casts everyone who participated in the rally as belonging to the far-right.
Mm-hmm.
I should also mention that two of these thugs are seen just walking around freely within the parliament grounds. No police seems to go after them. And a dark-skinned man who was captured jousting with riot police has been identified publicly, and yet he hasn't been arrested.
Yeah, that sounds very disturbing. I mean, what you just shared with us is really a cause for concern, and I'm very glad that you can tell us about this because you're not going to hear that on the mainstream media. Now, Michael, apart from Greece's years-long economic crisis and the emerging political one brought about by the Prespa Agreement, your country is now faced with the latent threat from Turkey in the Eastern Aegean. So all things considered, then, is a so-called perfect storm brewing? And if so, what can be done to offset any negative outcomes?
That's a very good question, Andrew. I think the significance, not just of this threat, but of the but also of the current Greek government's inability to respond to this threat in accordance with Greece's national interests is visible through a remark that was made just yesterday by a member of a Syriza's representation in Parliament during the debate over the Prespa agreement. This particular MP represents the Dodecanese Islands, which are next to Turkey, and he said that he was jealous of the northern Greek region of Macedonia for having a Prespa agreement, and that he wishes the Dodecanese Islands had such an agreement as well. It's a ridiculous statement. And the now former foreign minister of Greece, Nikos Kogias, who was one of the signatories of the Prespa agreement, had also stated at that time his desire to solve the Cyprus dispute as well, and also disputes with other neighboring countries such as Albania. So as you can imagine, with the Prespa deal opposed by at least three-fourths of the Greek public, such statements are making a lot of people very nervous and uneasy as to what concessions the current Greek government might make. And the current government, their priorities seem to be migrants and open borders, obeying NATO and the European Union, decrying anything Greek as being ethnocentrist and nationalist, and ruining longtime friendships and partnerships with countries that have long been friends of Greece, such as Russia.
Yeah, I can definitely understand why people are really concerned about this. Now, Michael, in terms of the bigger picture then, what effect has the destabilization of Greece, in terms of how it was both victimized by international creditors and also its own self-inflicted damage with the Prespa agreement, what can that have on Balkan geopolitics? And similarly, how could the prospective stabilization of Greece, if that ever happens, help secure this conflict-prone region?
Dare I say this is the elephant in the room, Andrew. My own observation of developments in Greece and in the broader neighborhood of Greece is that trouble is brewing, of course, in Greece's northern neighbor and also in Albania and Kosovo. Then we have the Trump administration, which has threatened Turkey with economic destruction very recently. And the EU is teetering along. There seem to be two factions at play right now, one which favors Brexit, the Yellow Vests and the regimes of the likes of Orban and Salvini, and the other side, exemplified by Merkel and Macron, pushing for integration at all costs, and as part and parcel of this integration, pushing for the formation of a EU army, which we're hearing a lot about recently. Merkel recently remarked regarding Brexit that losing Britain was okay because the EU was gaining countries, and NATO were gaining countries in the Balkans, such as Greece's northern neighbor, and other countries in the Balkans as well. And if I may say so, that's a ludicrous statement. It reeks of desperation, and that's without taking into account the trouble that seems to be slowly brewing in the Balkan region. The Prespa agreement is contributing to this destabilization, and for a host of legitimate legal reasons, it must be done away with. And these reasons include the fact that it was not signed by the president of Greece's northern neighbor. This was actually recently brought up by Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov. The referendum on the issue in Greece's northern neighbor did not attain the necessary 50% plus one participation rate. And they also have not changed their constitution despite supposedly ratifying these constitutional changes. The Greek government is violating its own constitution by not attempting to attain a supermajority in parliament to approve the Prespa agreement. So I feel that in the long run, or actually in the not so long run, the boundaries of many of these former Yugoslav and post-communist states are not sustainable. I sense that conflict is brewing and is coming our way. And while the efforts of the U.S. State Department, NATO, and EU to dominate the region and gain a stronger foothold in the region are brewing schisms that have laid dormant for a couple of decades and are threatening a balance that existed between the powers in the region for several decades. So things may unfortunately have to get worse before they get better.
Okay, Michael, I was so grateful that you found the time to talk to us today and tell us the truth about what's really happening in Greece right now. It sounds like your country is in serious trouble, and I hope that it'll weather this latest storm.
This is the Allegos Radio with Michael Nevradakis, where we just heard my recent interview with Andrew Karipko of Radio Sputnik's Trendstorm radio program. This interview provided further analysis of the Macedonia dispute and the PRESPA agreement. And what we'll hear next is one final interview, this one going back to October 2018, providing further background on the PRESPA agreement and discussing the failed referendum in Greece's northern neighbor, which had just taken place. The failure, which, however, did not stop the PRESPA agreement from being rammed through anyway. This interview originally aired on October 5th, 2018, on Radio Sputnik's Fault Lines program with Garland Nixon and Lee Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Welcome back to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, 105.5 FM, 1390 AM in Washington, D.C. We have with us now Dr. Michael Nevradakis. He is the host of Dialogos, I hope I'm getting that right, radio, a contributor to Mint Press, and of course, he is the editor of the Hellenic Insider. Good morning, Dr. Nevradakis, and welcome to Fault Lines.
Hi there. Good morning. Glad to be back.
Wonderful. So there was a referendum in North Macedonia. There's been a lot of discussion. You know, it's now every, you know, if somebody votes for, you know, a new member of the school board at the PTA and, you know, in an elementary school in Sheboygan, Michigan, there's a claim of election interference. So, but some of them are valid, some of them aren't, but we're accustomed to that. So start off, let me be honest with you, Dr. Nevradakis. I couldn't find North Macedonia on a map if you put a gun to my head right now. So let's start off this. Where is North Macedonia? And before we get to what happened in the referendum, what is this referendum about and why is it important?
Well, quite a few things to unpack over there. First of all, it's not officially North Macedonia yet. The referendum that they held was in part asking voters of that country whether they wanted to approve a constitutional name change for the country. They call themselves the Republic of Macedonia, or, you know, simply Macedonia. In the United Nations, however, they remain recognized under the name of former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, which is often abbreviated as FYROM, F-Y-R-O-M. And they're a small country that is landlocked right to the north of Greece. They border Greece. They used to be part of Yugoslavia before it collapsed in the early 1990s, before Yugoslavia collapsed. And the whole name dispute over the name Macedonia began in earnest following the collapse of Yugoslavia, when this country declared itself independent and declared its name to be the Republic of Macedonia, which is also the name of a region of northern Greece, which is also home to Greece's second largest city, Thessaloniki. That region is also known as Macedonia. And Greeks from that region are known as Macedonians, Greek Macedonians. So a big diplomatic battle erupted beginning 90s over the name, and a lot of this had to do with the fact that claims were being made by the people of this new country, by the politicians really of this new country, that claims upon symbols, for instance, that were ancient Greek symbols, they had to name things in their country after figures like Alexander the Great, who was a famous ancient Macedonian, and an ancient Macedonian Greek. Their flag even had an ancient Greek symbol, the Star of Vergina, and they were actually forced to change their flag to their current flag after Greece basically had a dispute over their original flag. And in 1994, the temporary United Nations name of FYROM, or Republic of Macedonia, was established, and since been stalemate until recently. This agreement came earlier this year between the Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras and the Prime Minister of Greece's northern neighbor, Zoran Zaev. And under this agreement, the country would be recognized internationally and also self constitutionally North Macedonia. So the argument here is that there is a geographic qualifier that separates North Macedonia from Greek region of Macedonia. There's a number of other provisions in the bill, but what in the agreement, but what the voters of this country were being asked to vote on this past Sunday has to do with whether they not only approve the name change, but whether they approve on the country's NATO and European Union candidacy, because apparently as part of this deal, Greece's veto for the country to be to enter NATO and to enter the European Union will be lifted.
You know, that answers...
what voters were actually asked.
Yeah, go ahead. Continue.
Yes, what voters were asked was whether they want their country to continue down a path of UN NATO membership.
Okay, so that answered my question, because I was going to ask, why is it? I mean, this little old country of 2 million people, the United States, you know, EU, NATO, and Russia, you know, all considered as a significantly consequential matter. So I was going to ask this: is it just the bragging rights of getting, you know, if you're NATO or Russia or whoever, is it just the bragging rights of getting another member in your, or is there some, you know, significance to the, you know, militarily to their location or to their, you know, maybe they have natural resources or something? Because, you know, 2 million people there is not going to, by any imagination, shift the balance of power, you know, in the world. So what is it about Macedonia, do you think, that makes, you know, the elephants fighting over this one little peanut?
Right. Excellent question. And as you said, on its own, it's a very small country, a population of about 2 million. And yet it's a piece in a larger chess battle between the major players in the region. A few things to point out. First of all, the country has the largest U.S. embassy in Southern Europe, if not the world. In fact, it's a huge complex outside the capital of the country. The capital is called Skopje. Per capita, there's more U.S. diplomats and U.S. diplomatic staff in this country than in any other country in Europe. So it's considered highly important, clearly, by the United States, by the State Department, because they want to, first of all, in the Western Balkans. The Western Balkans is seen as the next frontier for the West. And by the West, I mean NATO and the European Union to expand. They've already, in part, begun their expansion in this region, and they want this expansion to continue to keep Russia, big bad Russia, out of the region. And at the same time, if you look at the text of the agreement between
Dr. Nevardakis, let's take a quick break. You're breaking up a little bit. Our guy's going to call you right back, and then we'll clear that. We'll hopefully clear your line. So they're going to hang up and call you right back to try to get a little clearer line. Okay. Okay, so what we're talking about, we're talking with Dr. Michael Nevardakis. He is a friend of the show. He is normally in Greece. I can't say that he's there, but when we have now, because he travels around, but these are to some people, when we talk about the naming or a referendum of North Macedonia or something like that, a lot of people think, are you back, Dr. Nevardakis?
I am back.
Yes. One thing I was saying is this, you know, a lot of people, when you talk about, you know, North Macedonia or some tiny little country like that, a lot of people think these things are insignificant. And, you know, these smaller, they only think about, you know, well, Russia, China, the United States, India, et cetera. But they forget, you know, World War One started, you know, over Serbia. I mean, not a tiny country, but certainly not, you know, major wars and major conflicts have started, you know, based on disagreements over small countries and seemingly small issues like that. So while there are a lot of people saying, well, why is he even doing a segment on who cares about North Macedonia? People need to know these things because they historically, these types of things have been the fodder for larger conflicts, correct?
Yes, that is correct. And what I will add is what I was going to mention before, the text of the agreement between the two countries also includes a paragraph in which the two countries agree that they will have an open border between them for the purposes of oil and gas transportation. And that's significant because there are many planned pipeline routes, gas pipeline routes, that if you look at maps of these proposed routes, they go right through the two countries. So this agreement sets into place a possible path for these pipelines to run through both of the countries unimpeded, basically.
These pipelines would be from where? You know, where would they be originating and where would they be terminating?
Well, that's the second part of the answer. This is basically part of the battle that we're seeing between East and West, because these are pipelines that could possibly be originating from Russia and the Black Sea, or they could be pipelines that are originating from Azerbaijan through Turkey. At the same time, however, there are also interests that want to run pipelines through Greece, from Cyprus, and from Israel. So there's a battle going on now over whose pipeline is going to basically win out in the end and have the right to go through Greece. And then some of these routes will then go north through the Balkans, including through Greece's northern neighbor.
So we know historically, you know, part of the issue going on in Afghanistan, going on in Syria, there were certainly pipeline issues going on there. There's oil and gas under the Golan Heights. So we continually see a lot of conflicts that are fueled by energy. Now, let me ask you this. We know another thing we know is there's been some discussion, you know, the Russians provide about a third of the gas for northern Europe through a pipeline. And that they're in the process of building, you know, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. The U.S. is trying to stop that. The U.S. wants to, you know, take that market and kind of push the northern Europeans to buy gas from the U.S. But it's apparently more expensive, because certainly we got to transport it across the sea as opposed to piping it right to them. Do you think this at all is part of that dispute? Or that discussion between, you know, how whether or not Europe is going to get a significant portion of their gas from Russia or from the United States, or is this totally unrelated to that whole Nord Stream 2 pipeline controversy?
No, it's absolutely related. And Russia would, you know, just like you mentioned, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the plans go back over for the South Stream pipeline, which would enter through eastern Greece, travel through the north of Greece, and some of these routes, if you look at maps, would then run north through the Balkan Peninsula and into continental Europe. So this is another battleground between the United States and Russia. As you mentioned, the United States would like to get gas delivered to Europe through other means. Some of it could come from the U.S., but the current government of Greece, the leftist, in quotations, government of Greece, has gotten very warm toward Israel in the past couple of years, even though this is from a party that was once very anti-Israel before it was elected in 2015. There have been deals made with Cyprus, Greece, and Israel, and sometimes Egypt is also a player in these deals as well, to get energy pipelines from Israel and from North Africa into Greece and Cyprus. This also then brings Turkey into the picture. Anything that involves Cyprus or anything that is going on in northern Greece, in the Aegean Sea region, Turkey aggressively attempts to, and right now Turkey has developed closer relations with Russia and colder relations with the United States. So there's this, as you can see, this geopolitical chess match going on. There's a lot of players. There's a lot of moving pieces. This North Macedonia agreement is very much a part of that, and it has a lot more to do than just the name.
It's interesting because time and again, when we look into these, I don't want to use the words conflicts because they certainly hasn't risen to that level, but these issues that arise between countries, and we hear a lot of discussion that it's about, you know, ethnicity or things like that too. The really powerful people, oftentimes, you know, while the locals or while the, you know, working class people are talking about things like ethnicity and textbooks and things like that, when you get to the top, it seems like the people in power are always looking at kind of money and how the big, huge corporations and the, you know, particularly in the Middle East and in Eastern Europe and, you know, Turkey, Greece area, the discussion so often seems to come back to the transportation of natural resources, oil, gas, et cetera, and who's going to get the, who's going to have the, you know, the horsepower to push their country's companies into the mix and take all of the money. So it seems like there's separate issues here. There's issues for the people of Greece and whatever it's going to be called or is called now, that's where we can refer to as North Macedonia. They have their level of issues, but the people at the top, it seems like it comes down to money and moving gas and oil. Would you say that's kind of accurate?
I would say that's very accurate. For the people in both countries, there's a lot of national pride at stake. There's a lot of historical and cultural significance to what is going on. Interestingly, in Greece's northern neighbor, it was the nationalists of that country that were very much against this deal because they feel that they're giving up part of their identity. They feel they are true Macedonians. So even calling themselves North Macedonia is seen as a defeat. On the other hand, for many people in Greece, it's the opposite. They feel that Macedonia is a name that is associated with Greek culture and Greek history. And giving up that name, even with a qualifier such as North in front of it, is a defeat for Greece. So you have that aspect, and it's completely different from, you know, what the politicians and the powers that be are thinking, agreements such as this. And what should be clear, however, is that this was an issue that was largely dormant for the past 2+ decades. And suddenly, you know, in the beginning of 2018, there's this big, big push all of a sudden to get a deal done and to get it done immediately. So this sense of urgency clearly doesn't have anything to do with the people in either country. It has a lot more to do with geopolitical developments and the need that certain powers feel to have this problem solved and out of the way so that they can move forward with certain plans. And those plans for some of those powers include getting, you know, so-called North Macedonia into NATO, getting them into the European Union, and perhaps after that, getting some projects forward with pipelines and so forth.
We only got about 2 minutes left, but I did want to ask you, you mentioned foreign meddling. Was there foreign meddling or was there accusations of foreign meddling?
There certainly were accusations of it, and the usual suspect, of course, is Russia. Greece actually expelled 2 Russian diplomats over the summer, even though Greece has historically had great relations with Russia, supposedly for helping to fuel the anti-agreement protests in Greece. At the same time, there were accusations from NATO, from the State Department, that Russia was meddling in engaging in a disinformation campaign in order to defeat the referendum. Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, visited the country to urge voters there to vote yes on the agreement. And even George W. Bush came out of mothballs to urge the people of Macedonia, as he wrote it, to vote yes on the deal. And clearly, you know, Russia, it would probably be a lie to say that Russia was not involved in this issue somehow, and that
Dr. Nevardakis, like the EU and the US were pretty clear and open that they were, and I'm not going to use the word meddling, that they were attempting to influence the election in a way that they felt benefited them. And it would seem likely to me that any other country, including Russia, would do the same thing. And so it seems a little weird that they're doing it in the open and they're accusing someone else of doing what they're doing in the open.
Exactly. That's exactly what was going on. And certainly Russia has interest in the region, but it's hypocritical for the U.S. and the West to accuse Russia of meddling when they themselves were very actively attempting to influence the views of voters. And Russia has threatened to veto this bill in the U.N.
You're listening to the Dialogos Radio. I'm Michael Navratilakis, and you just heard an interview that I provided to Radio Sputnik's Fault Lines program with Garland Nixon and Lee Stranahan on October 5th, 2018, in the aftermath of the referendum on the Prespa Agreement, which was held in Greece's northern neighbor. And with that, today's program is just about to come to a close, and it is my hope that I'll be able to be with you again soon with regularly scheduled programming and interviews on matters of importance to Greece and the worldwide Greek community, such as the Macedonia issue, which I believe is far from being resolved. Until then, visit our website, dialogosmedia.org, dialogosmedia.org, for articles, analysis, our podcast, and our show archive. For Dialogos Radio, this is Michael Navratilakis. Thanks for joining us.